Okay, well, good morning. As we said last week, today we have an interesting topic, and it's and interestingly, I always say, you know, when we do the Chumash, you know, so I read the Pasuk and I look up a few things and we see. So last week I had a few things prepared, but because we didn't do it last week, so I had a whole week, well, now there's 100,000 more things that we find. So we'll see how we go, and it doesn't end and it doesn't start, but it's amazing, and it's very, very, very fascinating topic. And even though, good morning, Leah, even though it seems like something which is so not relevant to us and we have nothing to do with it nowadays, and but there's so much relevance, and that's what's amazing. So what we'll do is, first, before we read the pasuk, I just want to share two little stories which will make it quite puzzling, and then we'll start to try a little bit to understand. So the first story, these are famous stories. One of them is a story in Tanakh, in the prophet Shmuel, at the end of Shmuel Aleph. This is just before Shaul passes away. And the story goes like this, that Shaul, actually, interestingly enough, one of the big things that he did do was that he managed to get rid of almost all of what we call witches, whatever word you want to use, people who engaged in any form of witchcraft in the land of Israel. They were nearly all gone. But I'll read you the words. I'm not going to read the Hebrew. I'll just read in the English. This is almost at the end. So it says, it happened in those days that the Philistines, okay, the Plishtim, mobilized their camps to the army to fight against Israel. And Achish said to David, know that you will go forth with me to the camp. Achish was the head of the Plishtim. And David, at that time, as we know, there was this rivalry between David and Shaul. So Achish, even though he was an enemy, so to speak, of the Jewish people, thought that since Shaul doesn't like David, that David would side with him. Anyways, so David says, how did David, he replied to Achish, therefore you shall see what your servant will do. Obviously, he's not having allegiance to the one who's against the Jewish people. But Achish then said to David, therefore I will appoint you as my permanent bodyguard. Okay, now we come to an interesting thing. Now, the Plishtim are about to attack the Jewish people again. Right? Shaul is very afraid. He doesn't know what to do. For some reason, he feels very, very threatened, even more than usual. So usually, when the king is threatened, and as we know as Jewish people, what do? Who do we consult with? Who would we go to? Hashem, exactly. And there are different means that we access Hashem. So either the prophet of the time, the Navi, you might go to the Beis HaMikdash and ask the Urim Vitzumim in those days. They had different ways of accessing a divine thing. He didn't know what to do. What should he do? How should he go about? So it says, Shmuel had died. And so the prophet, actually Shmuel wasn't alive anymore. So that was one means that he didn't have. And all of Israel eulogized him and buried him in Ramah. Now, what happens? So it says like this. When Shaul saw the Plishtim camp, he was afraid and his heart trembled greatly. Shaul inquired of Hashem, but Hashem did not answer him, neither in a dream, nor through the Urim V'Tumim, nor through the prophets. So he doesn't know what to do. It seems to be a blockage. He's not getting any message from Hashem. And he's petrified. Okay, so what happens? So what does he do? Shaul says to his servants, seek out a woman, and in English they translated who practices necromancy, magic. Okay, she's a magician. She's a machashefa, okay, of some type. I don't know, Oyv or Yudaini, whatever it was in those days. She engaged in some form of witchcraft. And I will go to her and inquire through her. His servants said to him, behold, there is a woman who practices whatever, this witchcraft, in Endor. The truth is, initially they said, but you destroyed them all. There aren't any left, because Shaul did. He actually got rid of them. But there was one, always there has to be a few that slipped through. They found, they searched, and there was one that had evaded and was still alive and still practicing. So Shaul disguised himself. He donned different clothing, and he went, taking two men with him. They came to the woman at night, and he said to her, please divine for me through, you know, all your whatever means, and raise up whomever I shall tell you. But the woman said to him, behold, you surely know what Shaul has done, that he has eliminated all of the, I don't know, let me see the Hebrew word over here, menakesh, all of these witchcraft people, as he says, and you don't need diviner from the land. So why do you seek to entrap me, to have me killed? Shaul then swore to her by Hashem, saying, as Hashem lives, this thing will not be held against you as an iniquity, so you will not be held responsible. The woman asked, whom shall I raise up for you? And he said, raise up Shmuel for me. Okay, Shmuel had just passed away, and he wants Shmuel. So what happens is a very strange story. Okay, this is in the Navi. So the Shmuel, the woman then saw Shmuel, and she screamed in a loud voice. She did. She raised up Shmuel, and she screamed in a loud voice. The woman said to Shaul, why did you deceive me? You are Shaul. She realized that this was the king, because for nobody else would she have had that power to actually raise up the prophet Shmuel. He would have never come up, and she would have never been able to see him. Okay, what happens? Fascinating. The Mefarshim say she could see him, not hear. Shaul could hear him and not see him. Okay, so what happens? Let's see next. So then she said like this. The king said to her, fear not. What did you see? The woman said to Shaul, I saw a great man ascending from the earth. He then said to her, what does he look like? She said, an elderly man is ascending and he is garbed in a cloak. Shaul realized that it was Shmuel, and he bowed down upon his face to the ground and prostrated himself. Shmuel said to Shaul, why did you disturb me to raise me up? Shaul replied, I am in great distress, and the Plishtim are at war against me. Hashem has turned away from me and does not answer me anymore, neither through the hands of the prophets nor in dreams. So I called upon you to inform me, what should I do? This is like a story from, you know, the fairy tales, as we say, right? Okay, what happens next? This is what perek? It's Chavches in Shmuel Aleph. Yeah, you can see. Come, Rose, come sit. Yeah, good morning. Okay, so what happens here? So Shmuel then said, but why do you ask me, since Hashem has turned away from you and has become your adversary? And Hashem has done for himself that which he spoke through me. For Hashem has torn the kingship from your hand and given it to your fellow too, David, because you did not obey the word of Hashem and did not carry out his wrath against Amalek. Therefore, Hashem has done this thing to you today, And Hashem will deliver Israel with you into the hands of the Plishtim. Tomorrow, you and your sons will be with me, which means you're going to die. And also the Israelite camp will Hashem deliver into the hands of the Plishtim. That was all that Shmuel said. So in other words, he's delivering a very terrible prophecy, which really he had already told Shaul earlier that the kingship will not remain with Shaul. So Shaul, this wasn't new, but this was really the end. And the truth is, this is the last battle that happens. And in this battle is where Shaul and his son Yonasan are actually killed. And it says like this, Shaul quickly fell his full height to the ground, and he was exceedingly frightened by Shmuel's words. Also, he had no strength, for he had not eaten any food. Okay, the woman begged him to eat, this Mahashef or whatever she was, and he ate, and he felt a little bit strengthened, and then he left that night, and then he went to war the next day, and he died. Now, that's one story. Now, this is a very puzzling story because, as we know, first of all, we're not permitted to engage in this type of behavior. What was Shaul doing? But even more than that, what it sounds like, it really sounds like there is some power and that they can actually take somebody and rise him from the dead and speak to him and get a whole conversation going between somebody who had passed away and somebody who was still alive, and not even through a miracle. This was through a sorcery. Yeah, very. I don't know. It's very interesting, Rona. We'll see. So it's a very puzzling story. There's another story, and this one's less puzzling but interesting. It's a story that happens much, much later. So this is in the times of Tanakh. This is the times of the prophets. This is the time, Rona said an interesting thing. It is a time of very high spiritual, revealed spiritual energy in the world. Okay, so that we have to keep in mind. It's not the time of the Beis Hamikdash yet, but they do have the Mishkan and they have prophets. That's just something that we'll see how that plays out afterwards. But later on in history, during the time of the second Beis Hamikdash, there was one of the great Tanoim. His name was Shimon ben Shatach, right? He was a very famous man. He actually, good morning and good to see you.
Thanks, I made it.
Yes, Baruch Hashem. So Shimon ben Shatach was an incredible tzaddik and lived in a very difficult time. The king wasn't so good, didn't love him. His sister, very interesting. His sister's name, you might have heard of her, Shloimis Alexander. Alexandra, a very famous woman who actually herself became queen for some time, one of the few queens in Israel. She was an incredibly righteous woman married to an incredibly wicked man. But anyways, that's its own story for its own history share of itself. But Shimon ben Shattach, amongst many things that he did, was he also hunted witches. Okay, so this is the story. The story goes that there was a lot of witchcraft that was happening in Israel because the king wasn't a good man. Obviously, the level of the nation had lowered and people were engaging in practices that they shouldn't. There was obviously idol worship happening as well as witchcraft happening. And the story is that there was, it comes into the Gemara because they're talking about if you're permitted to actually hang a woman, because maybe it's not honorable for a woman to be hanging, even if she deserves that to be put to death. Maybe it's a different death penalty, and that's the whole discussion. Anyways, it says that Shimon ben Shattach hanged 80 women in Ashkelon. What happened? So it says, the Gemara Yerushalmi says, it says like this, that when Shimon ben Shattach was appointed as the Nasi, he was the head, he's one of the people mentioned in Pirkei Aves, as we're learning now, and he was told that there were 80 witches in a cave in Ashkelon. In order to trick them, he came on a rainy day together with 80 young men, who were each given a jar with a dry cloak in it. So it's raining outside, and they have in their jar a dry cloak. What happens? So he says like this. He told them that upon hearing his signal, they should put on the dry cloak and come in to lift the witches off the ground, which would steal their power from them. This is an interesting thing that it seems, and this we had in Mitzrayim as well, that they need to be grounded in order to be able to have any power at all. Somehow their attachment to the ground helps them to do their magic. Okay, so what's going to happen? So Shimon ben Shattach called for the witches to open the cave door so that he could enter. Upon doing so, he impressed them, entering in a dry cloak, because it was raining outside, and he comes in with this dry cloak. So already they think, oh, he also engages in some form of magic or trickery or whatever it may be. He's one of us, right? Okay. And what does he do? It says the conversation was that he would share some secrets with them, let them share some secrets with him. It would be wonderful. Okay. Anyway, so he says, like he says, and told them that he came to learn and to teach. Each of the witches conjured up part of a festive meal and then inquired as to what magic he could do. So he offered to make 80 young men appear in dry cloaks who would sweep them off their feet. Well, giving the signal, the men entered and captured the witches, who were taken off and hanged. That's the story that the Gemara says. This was his way. He tricked them. He removed their power for a minute so that they can be captured. Then they were actually killed because they were practicing witchcraft. Okay, now, I'll tell you, the end of the story is actually a heart-wrenching end, to be honest. That puts a little bit of perspective on the time of history that it was. The story concludes that relatives of those witches who were angered by this came forward with false testimony, accusing Shimon ben Shattach's son of a capital crime. Upon being convicted and led to his death, the witnesses recanted. Okay, so they weren't on it. It was a lie, the whole thing. But the son insisted that the punishment be carried out, since he feared that people would suspect that the sages showed favoritism to him by allowing the witnesses to change their mind, something that would weaken the efforts that his father had made in strengthening these laws. It's a terrible story, but it was part of the time where the people did not respect the sages, and it was a very difficult time in Israel at that time. Okay, that's its own, as we say, an own history lesson to understand. But these two stories, very different stories, but still something in common, that there is some form of witchcraft and witches that, what's going on? Okay, so let's start with first the Pesukim in the Chumash, and then we'll start to, hopefully we'll get a few layers. As I said, because we had an extra week, so I found even more things, so it'll take us even longer. Okay, let's see. Now, first we'll do our Pasuk, which is in Parshas Mishpatim, but the truth is that there are Pesukim that talk about this in Devarim that I also want to read because it just gives the full picture. So on page 285 in front of you, there's really only three words we need from this page, from the Chumash: Machashefa loy sechaya. Do you see? You shall not allow a sorceress, whatever, sorceress to live. Okay, Machashefa, a woman, a magician woman. Now, the big question is, why does it say it this way? Why does it say Machashefa? Does it mean only a woman who engages in magic has to be put to death? And if a man does, it's fine, he's allowed. So let's see what it says. So look at Rashi. Rashi on 17 says, Machasheifa loy sechaya. Oh, I didn't realize that it goes on to the next. Okay, sorry. Okay, you shall not allow a sorcerer. So it says, Ella Tumas based. And first of all, she has to be put to death by the court. That's a very important thing, why it also says it this way, which means that you cannot just walk around killing somebody because you decide they're a witch. That's not the way it works. You have to bring them to court. The based has to decide, evaluate, and there's a whole system by which they go. Okay, that's the first thing. But the second thing is, Ve'echad scharim ve'echad nekeva. This law applies both males and females. But why does it say it in the female? Because it says, there's a famous thing in Torah, Ela shediber hakasov behaiveh. The verse speaks of that which is common. And it seems that especially in those days, the ones who were engaged in this type of behavior was mainly women. So that's why the Pasuk says it that way. But we'll see. How do we know that it's also men? Let's look on your next page. And this you can see is from Parshas Shoftim. This is much later. It's interesting. We're doing Parshas Mishpatim. Parshas Shoftim comes all the way at the end of the Chumash and Chumash Devarim, a few halachas which are repeated and more at length. And the reason is because in our Pasuk, it is just after they received the Torah, and they would be in the desert for 40 more years. Hopefully no witchcraft happening in the desert. But in Parsha Shoftim, it's just before they enter the land of Israel. And here, we have to get into more detail. And let's see why. So it says, on page 197, when you come into the land that Hashem gives you, you shall not learn to act according to the abominations of those nations that are living there now. And let's see, he's going to be very specific. Which things shouldn't we learn? Should not be found amongst you. This is a terrible thing that they used to do, one form of idol worship, where they would take the daughter or their son and pass them through fire. This was called serving the Melech. It was a terrible, terrible idol worship. Never, ever engage in this type of a practice. But then it continues. Kaisein, do you see that word? And they translate, and we'll see in a minute what Rashi tells us, one who practices divinations. We'll see, we'll read the pasuk, and then we'll see what Rashi will tell us what each one is. Kaisein ksamin. Ma'oinein, that's another one. Umenachesh, umechashef. Do you see there's different forms of these things, okay? We're going to see, reading omens or a sorcerer. We'll see what they all are. I want to just continue because there's a few more. V'choyver chover, an animal charmer. V'shoyel oivi yedaini, one who inquires of oiv or yedaini. Or v'doyresh el hamesim, one who consults the dead. And why should we get rid of this? Kisay avas Hashem, because this is like a disgusting, it's an abomination to Hashem. Kol oise eile, why is it so terrible? He says, ubiglal hatoyevais ha'eile, Hashem aleikecha mayrish oisam mipanecha. And it's because of these abominations that Hashem, your Hashem, banishes the nations from before you, which can mean he doesn't want you to live with that so that you should not learn from that. It shouldn't affect you. You shouldn't be influenced by that type of behavior. And then we have a very beautiful, famous pasuk that concludes this, which sounds like it has nothing to do, but this is the conclusion of this topic, and it's very important. We'll come back to it at the end. Tomim tiyeh im Hashem aleikecha. You shall be wholehearted with Hashem your God, which means that's the opposite to engaging in all of those practices. Before we go into a little bit the deeper understanding, let's just see what these are. So if you, sorry, go back one page, now 198, let's see what Rashi tells us. What are all these practices, these weird things? Okay, so it's interesting because us, I tell you what, we live here in Australia. Us Western people, to us, this is so foreign. And we look at it literally like children's fairy tales and crazy and stupid. And if you would come from other countries, if we would come from India, if we would come from the African countries, we would actually, and we would be steeped in that culture, we would have a different mindset. We might not trust it, and we might even have a rationalization, but there would be a part of us that would think, maybe there's something in it. There is, it's very cultural. So we are just steeped in the rational Western way of thinking. To us, this is beyond foreign. Nowadays, especially with our understanding of how things work and just the way our mindset. However, going back thousands of years to the time, and even not, as we say, if we go to different cultures, and even within the Jewish people themselves, and I'm not saying this in a demeaning way, but if you are from a more Sephardi background, you would have more of a leaning to having a little, like, this is not very foreign in different forms. Okay, so it's interesting, an Ashkenazi, a true Ashkenazi, a real, you know, I want to say it, a real German, if you want to say, the real cold or Litvak would be literally the diametrically, you know, like they wouldn't even believe in a dream. They wouldn't even believe in anything. They would never be bothered by anything, right? It's that real rational approach. However, if you're a Sephardi, or I don't know, like Michal always says, the Russians are very superstitious. I don't know. His mother is very superstitious. You know, there's certain cultures that are a little bit less rational, so to speak, even amongst the Ashkenazim, and definitely, let's see what it's all about, though. Is there something in it? Is there nothing in it? What is it all about? So before we do that, let's just see what it is. Okay, so let's see. So he says, on page 198, what is Kaisem Ksamen? One who practices divination. So he says, Eize hu Kaisem. This is Rashi. What is a diviner, as we say, diviner? Ha'aiche says, Maklai. So he holds his staff. Va'aimer, and he says, Im Eilech, should I go? Im Lo Eilech, or should I not go? V'chein hu Aimer, Ami Be'etza Yishal. My nation would ask its stick, Umakla Yogidlai, and its staff would tell it. Okay, now this is strange, and we would say, what kind of stick tell us? Okay, it's just, this is one of the forms of a type of a divination, if you want to say. It means giving a physical object, it doesn't necessarily only mean a stick, but any physical object, the power to dictate what you will do. You will ask it, and you will go according to whatever sign it sets for you. Okay, so you actually act in accordance to what it says. This is not allowed. Okay, so let's see the next thing. Ma'ainim. What's a ma'ainim? Rabbi Akiva Aimer, and Rabbi Akiva explains, Eilu noisne oinois. This is interesting. This one is the one who gives seasons. Oinois is time, seasons. Sha'aimrim, oine plainis, such and such a season. Yofel ahaschel is a good time to start. V'chachamim aimrim, but the sages say, Eilu oichse ha'ainayim. These are illusionists. Okay, now this already we understand a little bit more, and the truth is we understand both of them. Let's be honest. There are many people who believe a little bit that there are certain times that are better than others to start certain things. Okay, so according to this, this is a practice that we should not engage in. It shouldn't affect us at all. We shouldn't say Mondays are not good luck days and Fridays are better days, whatever it is. It's not right. As a Jew, we should not have that view at all. Or look in the horoscope and decide what?
Don't say Tuesday.
We do. Yeah, double key type. That's right. So you see.
And a lot of people have weddings
on Tuesday, but you can't say I'm not going to have a wedding on Monday, because you understand? You might have extra mazel on a certain day, but okay, let's see, let's understand. You're right, it's a good question, Chana. It's not so, this is very gray. It's not simple at all. It's not allowed, really, according to Torah. No, we're not. I mean, you can read it if you're laughing at it like it's a joke. But if at all, in your mind or heart, you will feel like, oh, maybe there's something in it, best just to stay away. Because we're really not. Yeah, we shouldn't. Yeah. Yeah, it's a bigger. So we have that. And the other one is interesting. The illusion is, this is a fascinating. What does that mean? Because that sounds almost like it's fake. Like they're just lying. Okay, we'll see. The Rambam, he thinks the whole thing of magic is one big illusion. There isn't such a thing, it doesn't even exist. And all it is our expert people who know how to fake, how to do something that makes it look like something else. Okay, but so this is also, and this comes a very interesting thing, and but again, this is not a halacha shir, that there are questions about magic shows. There are. There are questions about illusionists. There are halacha questions. If we all know that it's just a trick, then it's fine. But if they're so good and they talk you into it, that they're, you know, it could be a problem. So these are all interesting things. Okay, let's go to the next one. What's the next one? Menachesh, she says. What does a Menachesh do? So he, one who reads omens. He makes decisions based on occurrences, such as, and this sometimes we do, and this we should never do, pitay naflay mipiv, his bread fell from his mouth. I don't know, we all have our own little things, like when something happens, a pen falls a certain way, or we wake up in the morning and we say, I woke up on the wrong side of the bed and everything is going now, the whole day is going to go like that, you know? Sometimes we get ourselves into that trap. He gives a few examples. Tzvi, hifsikoi baderech, a deer blocked him on the road. Maklai nafal miyada, his staff fell from his hand. And he'll say, that's a sign something bad is going to happen, or whatever it is, or it's not a good day, or, you know, these things, we have to be very, very careful. There's no such thing for us as Jews. No, we have to believe, and that's what we'll see, that Hashem watches us, and every moment is a new, fresh moment for us, and we have nothing to worry about. Okay, let's see. But does it have that? Does this really have any substance? Is the big question. We don't know yet. We just know we're not permitted to engage in it. Let's see what he says. Then he goes on, v'shayel, what's the shayel oiv? One who inquires of oiv. Now, oiv is, he says, zeh mechashvus. This is, now we talk about the real word. This is a type of witchcraft. Sheshmoi pisaim, whose name is pisaim. Umidaber misechye. So what he does is he speaks, shechye, he speaks out of his armpit. Umayle es hames, and raises the dead. Bebeis hashechi shalai, in his armpit. Okay, some form of crazy witchcraft, which obviously...
Is it the people who can talk from the stomach?
You know, I don't know, Leah. Maybe.
You know,
yeah. I don't know. Okay. I don't know.
So people who can have two voices, they speak from the mouth and they speak from inside.
Probably an illusionist of a very expert, anyways, but these are all different types of, and not all of these things are around now, but the Yidayini is another similar one. What does he do? Machnis etzem chaya. So he puts a bone of an animal, and the name of the animal, of the bone is, it says Yidaya, that's why it's called Yidayini. And L'soich Piv, he puts it into his mouth, umedaber ha'etzem, and the bone speaks, al yedei mechashvus, by means of witchcraft. So you'll go and find out something you want to know about tomorrow or whatever from this expert on the Yidayini. Now, all of the, and Dairish Samesim is, Hamayla bizach, okay, I don't know, all kinds of crazy things, raises the dead, and then he asks questions of a skull, all kinds of crazy behaviors that people, whatever, that they did, they engaged in very much in those times.
Used to do it. They had the bones.
Oh, there you go.
And they used to throw the bones and they used to tell your fortune from the town.
You know, yeah, for a joke you went to them, but it's... ay, ay, ay. I'm sure that's very...
They raised their beads. This is... They all raised their beads. All the Africans...
What are they afraid of? Okay, underneath. There you go. Yes, I'm sure. I'm sure. yeah, it's very interesting.
The bed was never on the floor,
even if it had bed. It was raised up on boxes or on bricks.
They always had four bricks.
They call it chocolate.
It's very interesting. It's very. These are all the different cultural things that they, you know, that they had. I want to just read. Go to page 199. I want to see this Rashi, even though this is skipping to the end, because we're going to come to it. But I know we're not going to get to it today, and we will get to it next week, more in depth. But. Why? Okay, so we don't know yet if this is real, if this has any substance. All we know from here is that we're not permitted to engage, because when they're going to go into the land, they will meet people, like you met in Africa, who engage in these things, and we are not permitted to do these things or to engage in these type of behaviors. If we do, it's actually the death penalty for such, I guess, with witnesses and with warnings and all the different things that come together with it, to if you engage in certain of them. Certain, not certain. Yeah, there's different halachas. Okay, but let's just see the Pasuk 13. Just this is like the final pasuk for this unit. Then we're going to go in, as we say, tamim tiyeh. What does it mean, tamim tiyeh? It says, you shall be wholehearted. So he says like this. His halech, Rashi tells us, imay bitmimus. Walk with him with wholeheartedness. Utitzap eloi. Look ahead to him. In other words, not to the magic, not to any of these type of things. What should you be looking towards is to Hashem, which means, as we say, trust in what He has in store for you. V'loisach kar achar ha'asidais, and do not delve into the future. Ella kol mashe yavay alecha, whatever comes upon you, kabel b'tmimus, accept with wholeheartedness. V'oz tiye imai, and then you will be with him, ulechelkai, and of his portion. This is a very beautiful pasuk, a very famous beautiful pasuk, Tavim Tiye, which actually is the opposite of the magic, as we were talking. Because one of the main reasons why people will engage in magic, it's not the only reason, is to know the future, to know what to do. Sometimes it is to get rid of something that they think is negative, but one of the things is also to be aware of the future, to know how to live in that way. What is the cause for somebody searching that out? The main cause, the main motivation would begin with some form of an anxiety. A fear, an anxiety, a foreboding, something is negative is about to happen. So that's why what the pasuk tells us here, you will be coming into such a culture, you must arm yourself with incredible trust in Hashem. When you have that full trust in Hashem, there will not be any of that foreboding, there will not be any of that anxiety, and you will not be tempted to go and visit any of these type of people. That's the antidote, so to speak, for us, as Hashem says. This pasuk doesn't answer and doesn't say, is there any validity? Do they have any power? Is there something in it? That's not what this pasuk is telling us. It is just saying that as Jews, we put our trust in Hashem. So let's understand what this whole thing is. Okay, so I'm going to give you, before we're going to get to the answers, we're going to, the questions will get a little more, but let's see a little bit in the Gemara. Okay.
What was David told to go and find the sorceress?
Yeah, that's a good question. We don't know. It's a very interesting story, Daisy. Let's see. We're going to explore a little bit more. Pass down. Thank you so much. Here, Daisy, you can take one and pass down. Actually, I think I need to pass down more. Okay, let's quickly so we can see. Does everybody have? Beautiful. Okay, quickly, because it's so much. So I feel bad. I'm sorry. I just want to go through the different layers. Let's see the Gemara, how the Gemara discusses this a little bit, because it comes up in the Gemara with the big question, does it exist? Does it not exist? Should we believe in it? Should we not believe in it? So let's see what the Gemara says. On page one, you can see this is the Gemara Sanhedrin. So a whole discussion first about the punishment, because it's based on the Chumash. Now they're going to discuss, if you see on page one, I made a bracket. Having discussed the punishment, now we're going to understand, he says, what is the word kshafim, like machashefa, kshafim, sorcery. Amar Rabbi Yechanan. And here we have a very, very big, if you want to say, a basic disagreement, if you want to say. And this is two different ways, as we know in Torah, we're not going to get one answer, two different attitudes to this whole idea. So, Rabbi Yechanan, what does he say? Lama nikra shman kshafim. Why are they called kshafim? Shemachachishin pamalia shel maila. They contradict the upper legion. Okay. What does that mean, they contradict the upper legion? So if you look on number 11, if you see the bottom, it says, the word kshafim can be constructed as an acronym for kachash pamalia, which means contradicting the legion. What does that mean? He says, this alludes to the fact that sorcery can bring about the death of those for whom the heavenly legion had ordained life. Wow, this sounds like quite a powerful thing. Something was decided above, and this magic will somehow interfere with that normal conduct, the way it should have been, so to speak. That's what it sounds like. Okay, let's see. Okay, let's go on a little bit more, and we're going to come to understand it a little more. This actually is, as he says, apparently at odds with Rabbi Yochanan's teaching. Who is it? And let's see what this is. And this is Rabbi Chanina. So here we have the two opinions. Rabbi Yochanan, and who sounds like Shofim have some power, because they're confusing and they're changing something which seems to have been decided before that's what's going to happen, comes the magic, and somehow it gets mixed in up into the higher realms and changes the destiny. That's what it sounds. Let's see what Rabbi Chanina says. Rabbi Chanina says, "Afilu lidvar kshofim." This applies even in regards to matters of sorcery. That what? What does he say about that? So I skipped a very important line. Ein oid milvadai. There is none besides Hashem, which means that no harm can come to somebody whom Hashem has not decreed that they should have harm. So according to Rabbi Chanina, it's nothing. There is no way that the magician has any form of power to change anything. That's according to Rabbi Chanina. Rabbi Yochanan didn't sound that way. He sounded like there was some power. We don't know how much, but something. So let's see, there's going to be a discussion about this, as we know. So let's see. A related incident involving Rabbi Chanina. So what happened with Rabbi Chanina? It says there was a certain woman who sought to take dust from beneath Rabbi Chanina's feet for the purpose of performing sorcery against him. Okay, so he was sitting there and he realized what she was doing. So he said to her, "If you are successful in employing sorcery against me, go ahead and do it. But I have no fear, because ein oid milvadai, there's nothing besides God." So he was treating her with real contempt and laughing at her and saying, "You can do whatever you like. It's not going to have any negative effect on me." But let's see on page 2 how the Gemara continues. So the Gemara says like this. The Gemara now asks, "But it is not so. Because Rabbi Yochanan said, Lama nikrashman mechashvim, why are they called mechashvim? Shemachachishin bepamalia shamayla, because they are contradicting the upper legions. So it sounds like they do have some kind of power." So they answer, the Gemara says, Rabbi Chanina's different. Because he had great merit. Okay, so now, very interesting. What does this mean? This sounds like. And let's see what they explain beautifully on the bottom, on number 17. Look what it says. "And therefore," this is, they're bringing from the Mefarshim of the Gemara, "he was afforded an unusual degree of heavenly protection." Unusual degree. So he says like this. It gives a beautiful mashal. It says, "A king ordered that a certain number of his court be awarded various indulgences. Sometime thereafter, the king granted an executioner permission to stay, to slay anybody who had ever violated a royal decree. If the person who had found favor with the king never sinned, he is safe from the executioner's sword. But if he sinned, the executioner has permission to kill him regardless of his good standing." So he says, similarly, Hashem created the forces of sorcery and invested them with the power to harm anybody who is not perfectly righteous, regardless of whether the person was ordained to live or die. However, concerning the perfectly righteous, then Einoid Milvadez, there's none besides him. Hashem protected them by withholding from the forces of sorcery the power to harm them. That's one way of looking at it. Okay, so from here it almost sounds like Rabbi Chanina is only because of his special status. But really, for all the rest of us, we got to be worried. We have something to worry about. And if somebody does employ some form of sorcery against us, we have to be careful, because maybe there is some power in what they're doing. Okay, don't worry, we're going to understand a little more soon. Let's see a little bit more in the Gemara, and then we're going to see some of the Mefarshim. And let's see, the Gemara is going to also tell us a few other very interesting things about this idea of sorcery. So we know in the place that we had it first was in Egypt, right, where Moshe Rabbeinu went, and it says Egypt was, you know, they were the professionals of sorcery, as we know. It says Rabbi Evu Bar Nagri. Okay, so what does he say? Amar Rabbi Chia Bar Abba. So it says like this, a very interesting thing. In the Pasuk, when it talks about the magic in Egypt, it uses the word bilatehem, which is magic, but you see the word bilatehem, and then he says, that means that they used demons. Okay, now we're getting to something even more spooky, that there's a concept of shadim, demons. And they used to summon the demons and they would accomplish what they needed. There's another word, bilahatehem. Do you see with the extra hey? If you do that, if that word is used, elu maisek shafim, this is a reference to acts of sorcery. Now there is a difference between ordinary sorcery, so to speak, and getting shadim. Shadim is a different power, it's a different spiritual power, which would mean that the sorcerer doesn't really have his own power. He has to summon a shade to come and help him accomplish the negative thing that he wants to accomplish. And the Gemara discusses a fascinating thing. It says like this, that how does it work? It's sometimes they can do without the demon. Sometimes they need the demon. I just want to see if you look on the top of on the second column. It says if a sorcerer is particular about using a specific type of utensil, then his sorcery is performed through a demon. But if he is not particular about using a specific type of utensil, he performs independent sorcery. So he's even more powerful. Okay. And even in Egypt, we know what happened in Egypt. I just want to see, it's interesting because it goes through different things, different ones have different punishments. I just wanted to see, let me show you something interesting on the next paragraph. Abaya elaborates, Ha'aisa maisa b'skila, one who actually performs an act through sorcery is punished by stoning. And he gives an example, then he says, but then, ha'aiches es ha'inayim, patur aval osur. But one who merely creates an illusion is exempt from stoning, but his action is nonetheless forbidden. Mutar l'chat chilek dvar chanina v'rabi oishia, actions that are permissible in the first place are those that are like the actions of Rabbi Chanina and Rabbi Oishia. And what did they do? And this is not illusion and not magic, as we say. What did they do? And this is very interesting. So what they used to do was, it says, they would delve into the laws of creation every eve of Shabbos. And what they would actually, and a calf, which was at 1/3 of its maturity, would be created for them. And they would eat it in honor of Shabbos. That sounds like real magic. You know, they're creating this calf out of nothing, out of learning from Sefer Yetzirah, and then they would actually eat it in honor of Shabbos. Now, we don't understand how this works or what they did and what they engaged in, but this sounds like magic, but the Gemara Sim says here, it's not. We have to understand what's really the difference. What are they doing that's permissible, and what is it that they're actually doing? Okay, so I just wanted to see if there's any. Let's see. We're gonna leave that there. We'll come back to it afterwards. I want to go to page number 3. Let's see a little bit more. Very interesting. Also, more on sorcery, just to get a bit more, and then we're gonna, as I say, Rav Ashai says, I saw Karna's father blow his nose violently and expel pieces of silk cloth from his nostrils. Okay, so this was real magic, so to speak. I don't know, it looked like that was happening. He was doing all these things. Okay, that's what they're bringing examples of a thing. I'm going to show you, if you look into number 31 on the bottom, it discusses the thing we said before about the creation that they did of the calf. It says, while studying the book of creation, they would combine the letters of the name of Hashem with which the world was created, and a calf would come into being. This is not compared to sorcery, but rather Hashem's handiwork, for they utilized only his holy name. The Gemara calls this a permissible form of sorcery because it resembles sorcery, not because it's truly a type of sorcery. Okay, it's also a question if we would be able to do that. The truth is we wouldn't have the power to do it if we wanted to even. We would never be able to. These are great tzaddikim who really were in the spiritual understanding. They didn't just say words. They didn't just mix up any letters. They obviously really felt the godliness. They were so close to Hashem, they felt that godliness in the letters, and that gave them almost that godly power. However, we'll see if that's the way we're supposed to act anyways, but we'll see, come back to that later. But let's just see a little bit more. Then there's all the other kinds of sorcery, as he says. Okay, look what he says. But then there's an argument. So here this person says he can create whatever, he saw somebody blow his nose and silk cloth. Then the Gemara says, let's talk about, the plagues, which was a lot of sorcery happening there. So when we talk about the plague of lice, which Pare's sorcerers were unable to duplicate, right, it says that. It says, this is the finger, remember it says, Etzpe Elekim, this is the finger of Hashem, right? All of a sudden, they can't do this anymore. Why? And very interesting, from here we can derive that a demon cannot create a creature that is smaller than a barley corn. That's what it says there in the Chumash, that because the lice were so small, this was beyond the realm of the magicians. So they said, oh, this is God's work. Now it's not magic anymore, it's Hashem himself. Okay, then he says, but then Rabbi Lazar's statement meets with objection. Rav Papa says, they can't even create a creature the size of a camel. So he's laughing. What do you think? They even have any power? What are you talking about? Rather, when demons are called upon to produce creatures, they conjure them from distant places. And the reason that these magicians could not employ demons to conjure lice was that this one, a large being, they can conjure. But a small being, they can't. And one of the reasons they say is because it's much too hard to transport something very, very small from something somewhere so far. So it's a type of an illusion. It is a spiritual power that's bringing something from somewhere else. But creating? Not possible. That's what he says. Well, it's a joke. What do you think? They could actually make something? No. And then, very interesting, another, just a little bit more to see here, an eyewitness account of sorcery. So Rav said to Rav Chia, I myself saw a certain Arab merchant who took a sword and dismembered a camel and then rang a bell and the camel rose to his feet. Okay, so he watched this act of magic happening. So there's something in it, that's what he says. So let's see what they say. The account is discredited. So they said to him, after the camel rose, were there blood and innards on the ground? Most certainly not, for the Arab did not really dismember the camel. Rather, that was merely an illusion. So you can see the discussion that's happening, that there are two distinct views. There is one view that there is something in it. There is some power there. And there's another view that there's no power in it, that it's an illusion, that it's just a quickness of the hand. So it's very interesting. It's coming through the discussion of the Gemara. There's two different ways of looking, and we'll have to understand a little more. But then he continues, an incident in which sorcery played a role is cited, another one. So Zairi arrived in the Egyptian city of Alexandria. Okay, that was your city, and purchased a donkey that had, unbeknownst to him, been crafted through magic. When he came to a stream to give it a drink of water, the magic spell dissolved, and the donkey became a board of wood. Okay, so when Zaira asked the sellers for a refund, they said to him, if you were not the great Zairi, we would not reimburse you. Why? Because is there anyone who buys anything here in Alexandria without first testing it over water? In other words, there is so much magic practiced here that nobody trusts anything and everybody tests. But you're obviously a foreigner and you're a great man and you trusted us, so we'll reimburse you. Okay. Another magic. So this one shows there is some form of magic. And one last thing, another incident. A person named Yanai arrived at a certain inn. He said to the innkeeper, give me a drink of water. They brought him a shatita drink. It says on the bottom, what was it? It was a drink with, I forgot what it said. It's a special drink with flour mixed. Some kind of drink in those days. Okay, as the waitress served him, Yanai saw that her lips were moving and he realized that she was engaged in sorcery. So what does he do? So very quietly, he pours off a bit of the drink and the liquid that he poured off turned into scorpions. So he said to them, I drank of yours, you two drink of mine. He gave the waitress to drink of his own concoction and she became a donkey. He rode upon her and went out to the marketplace. Her friends came along and dissolved the magic spell for her. And that's why Yanai was seen riding upon a woman in the marketplace. Okay, this is very strange stories. And what? It's so much, even more, right? Tell you what, they don't know what they're missing. They should come to, yes, I tell you. Okay, so let's understand a little bit. What is this all about? Okay, a little bit. We're only going to scratch the surface, but another set of sheets I want to show you. Okay, so there's a very beautiful, which we won't get to today, a beautiful Ramban and the Ramban. Oh, yeah, I don't know. It's still in. 1 minute. In this booklet, do you have any more sheets?
Yes.
Yeah, oh, good. Sorry about that. I think, that's it. It's in here. Good, because there's more here. I know. Sorry, yeah, fantastic. In this, good. Because what we would like to see now is, we'll look first at this. It's not so simple. Got to be really careful what's going on here. So the truth is that next week we will look into the Ramban, and the Rambam really have a clear disagreement, if you want to say, a different view. The Rambam, Maimonides, very rational approach. In 1 minute, I'll tell you in a minute what page. But just telling you, we'll do that next week more in detail. But just to tell you, it's all fake. It's all illusion, and anybody who believes in it is silly. And yeah. The Ramban, on the other hand, has a whole theory that doesn't give it much credence in a sense, but there is powers of impurity, and there is powers in the world, and he explains how it works. So we'll see next week a little more. But let's just see first the Sefer HaChinuch. So what page is it in your booklet? Let me just see this. I'll tell you what page it is. Yeah, it's on the next page of the feed. Let's just see. Yeah. Okay. So on page 4, we'll understand a little bit. The Sefer HaChinuch, it's very, very beautiful. He, as we know, goes through all the mitzvahs in the Torah. So first we'll do the mitzvah of actually in our parsha of the Machashefa Lo Yisachai. So on page 4, it's bracketed, it's the 62, mitzvah 62 in the Torah. And let's see what he says. So here you have both the Hebrew and the English. I'll read a little bit in the Hebrew and then some in the English. If you go on the first column where the Hebrew is, so it says, Mishar Shei HaMitzvah, right? The source, the root of the mitzvah. Sheyadua ki inyan ha-kishuv davar ra'ad ma'id. So he's telling us why it's forbidden. He says it is a very evil practice. It's very bad. V'goyrem takolais kama livnei adam. And it actually brings tremendous harm. It causes people many misfortunes, as he says. Eini tzarech laharich bay. I don't have to go at length. Sheyiduim hadvarim, because it's known. V'al keinitz tavinu lesalik min ha'olam ha'mishtadol bazeh. So therefore, the mitzvah is to get rid of all the people who engage in this, lefishu ba kineged chayfetz Hashem, because it goes against the will of Hashem, shehu chafetz biyeshuvay v'sheyisnaheg hakol biderech hateva. Because Hashem has a plan, right? And He wants the world, the civilized world, to run all in the natural way that He said it, right? He set nature and He set things in, and He wants it to flow the way He said it. Hakol biderech hateva shehutba betchilas habriyah, as He has implanted at the beginning of creation. V'zeba l'shanes hakol. Magic is changing everything, right? That's what it's doing. It's interfering. V'inyan ha-kishuf, hu l'fi dati kein. This is the whole, the substance, so to speak, of sorcery. And what is it? So he explains. Shashem baruch hu sam b'tchilas habriya, because Hashem, at the beginning of creation, put, and go now to page 5, l'kol davar v'davar midivrei ha'olam teva. He made everything in the world with a specific type of a nature. And the reason was, lif'ol p'ulasai, toiva v'yishara, so that it can actually accomplish, if you want to say, in a proper function for the good, for the benefit, as we say, b'nei ha'olam asher bara, for the benefit of humanity and for everything else. So everything in nature was created in a way which it can function properly and make the world a place that runs, make things run good, well, if you want to say, in the way that Hashem set it out. V'tziva kol echad, and Hashem commanded each and everything lifol pa'alai l'mineyu, to actually, it's very interesting, according to its species. We're going to have a very interesting slant as far as sorcery in his eyes. Everything is meant to work really on their own, if you want to say, accomplish what they are meant to accomplish. Let's see what he means. So he says very specifically, and it says, Kamech Kasim Parshas Bereishis, as it says in Parshas Bereishis, Liminehu Al Hanivram, that everything according to its kind, that's how Hashem created, each species, each kind, distinctly. V'gam Al Kol Echad Himshul Kayach Milamayla, and everything was given a power from above, lahachrichai al maaseyu, to so to speak compel him to do what he is doing. So everything down here has a spiritual power which compels them to do what they are doing. And as he says, the example that's giving, the famous example, ein lecha esev milamata she'ein loy mazel milamayla she'aymer loy gdal. There's no, it's a very beautiful line, there's no even blade of grass down here that doesn't have a counterpart above, a spiritual counterpart that tells the blade of grass, grow. It doesn't just mean it tells, it gives the energy for that blade of grass to grow. So where is it getting its energy from? There is some spiritual sphere above. This is not direct, I mean, it is, we believe everything is Hashgacha Pratis, but this is a power which Hashem has invested in the world, which is the spiritual forces. Okay, this happens. Now, what does Hashem want? Umilvad, but Hashem wants grass should grow. That's what He wants. That's what He said. And every single thing should do what it's meant to do, what it's created to do. Umilvad pu'ulasan sha'isa kol echad ve'echad betivai. And besides the actions and the accomplishments that everybody does, everything does according to its nature, yesh lahem pu'ula acheres, it also can have a different accomplishment or a different effect. B'his arvam min mehem im min acher. If you mix two different kinds. It's a little bit similar to milk and meat, but we won't get into that today. But if you have two distinct species, you know, we are not permitted to do grafting and all the different types of mixing of the two species, because what that does is that creates a different, almost a different reality, a different form, if you want to say, than what each one individually was created for. Okay, so here we have an interesting thing, and this is how Hashem didn't want us to engage in that. Ubemleches ha-ta'aroives, you see, this is the mixture, as he says, yesh bat stodin shaloi hurshu b'nei adam lishtamesh b'hen. There are many aspects of it that people were not permitted to engage in. That's what Hashem said. He knows about it, there is a power, but he doesn't want us, it's a no-go zone. That's the, you know, the path that we're do not enter, that we're not meant to. Ki yedeya elaykim shesayf hamaisa hayayta levnei adam ba'aysan tadin ralohen. Because Hashem knows that the outcome of those things are negative and it's not beneficial for humankind. Umepneze minam mehem. That's why Hashem prevented, so to speak, and told us to stay away from them. There was a reason, there was a purpose. Hashem knows what is the positive benefits and what will lead to the negative benefits. This is what our rabbis say generally. This is a very interesting thing, because this leads to a whole different discussion, because what it sounds like from here is that Hashem created the world in a certain way, and we should just carry on with the way He created the world, right? So we shouldn't engage too much in, if you want to say, intervening in the natural order of things. Nowadays, this poses many questions. All medical breakthroughs, all scientific, many engage in many practices, as we know, which really intervene with the natural order of things. Are we permitted? Are we forbidden? And it's a fascinating thing. Are we permitted to do the research? Are we permitted to apply the research? Can we use the... And it's not simple. Nothing is straightforward. These things, in Israel now, they have rabbis literally that just... This is all they do. They spend their time with these questions, literally, day and night, to figure out, based upon, obviously, all the sources of... What are we permitted, what are we not, and how we're permitted, and which way, and what we can do. Because as we know, there are nowadays many benefits. But just see here what the Sefer HaChinuch says, who lived in the 1200s. Something very beautiful. He says a very fascinating thing. He says, Kol sheyesh bei mishum refua, ein bei mishum darkei ha'emairi. If something will heal, then it doesn't fall into the category of this interference, the darkei emairi. That's not what we're talking about, you see? He's saying what it is talking about is things which will bring harm. Okay, so the interesting question would be, would the atom bomb have been permitted to be, I don't know, right? Are you permitted to create weapons that destroy? You know, this is not for healing, right? This is for destruction. So it's very interesting. Are you allowed to play with atoms and move things around for that? That would be much more difficult, much more controversial, again, than the self-defense. A lot of different things come into it. But a fascinating thing. But here he says a very blanket thing. Interesting, according to the study, and he didn't even know about all what's... I mean, he knew maybe on one level. He didn't know what's going to happen nowadays with how we are playing around so much and how much healing in many ways. And we don't know the other side, unfortunately, but there is much healing that does come from a lot of the different things that they do. So according to him, that's permissible. Claimer, ein la'osra mipnei tzadkish. If you cannot say it's forbidden because it's like magic, achar sheyesh te'elesbay, because it has purpose and it has benefit. Matzoy b'nisayen be'emes, ein ze min hatzdadin ha'asurin. So therefore, this doesn't come into what is forbidden. Ki lo'nemru rak mitzad ha'nezek. Shebahen, only because of the damage. Very interesting. So this is a whole different angle on magic. This is what this is saying. It's not like the magic that we were talking about before, asking a rock or whatever. This is talking about interfering with nature. Because the source of magic is that. It's interfering with nature. That's what it's doing. It's taking something which should work one way and you're making it work the opposite way or a different way or come out in a different, or you're trying to block something that's supposed to happen tomorrow, and the magician, the whatever form you're talking about, will help you to avoid that from happening, right? So it's interfering with the natural order. It's time is up. I'm sorry. Really feel bad because we just scratched the surface. But in Mirtz Hashem, next week we will go more and we'll see more in depth and also understanding the spiritual side a little bit more of what this really means. Yes.